do our brains contain a limited amount of willpower? If you're on a diet, is it harder to keep your emotions in check? If you're studying for an exam, will you backslide on the diet? In an op-ed that appeared in the New York Times, Sandra Ahmet and Sam Wong argue that willpower is a limited resource best applied to one behavior at a time. So has your willpower been tested lately? Did you have to prioritize one area and abandon another? Call us with your story, 800-989-8255. You can also email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. And Sam Wong joins us now. He's an associate professor of molecular biology and neuroscience at Princeton University and co-author of the New York Times op-ed, Tighten Your Belt, Strengthen Your Mind, with us today from the studios at Princeton. Nice to have you on the program today.
Nice to be here. Thanks very much.
And willpower, is this an element of character or is this something that we store up in our brains?
Well, willpower is this thing that we talk about in everyday life as being a thing that we exercise when we refuse the candy or when we control ourselves in an awkward situation. But what's interesting is that psychologists have recently found in the last few years increasing evidence that willpower is a thing that you can measure and it's a thing that can run out. And it's something that's generated by the brain, like all our mental processes.
So there's a finite supply of willpower.
There is a finite supply of willpower. Psychologists like to call it self-regulation. And when you run out, they like to call it by the phrase ego depletion.
Ego depletion.
That's the phrase.
There's been a few times in my life where ego depletion. I'll bear that in mind. So what the effect of this, you argue, is that, in fact, if you're, trying to convince yourself to go out and run 5 miles every day, that it might not be the greatest idea to start studying for a big exam at the same time.
Well, the studies have shown that very different kinds of tasks draw on this one reserve, and it could be going out on the run. It could be trying to impress someone in a job interview. It could be refusing that extra helping. And all those appear to occlude one another. So if you do one, then you have a little bit less oomph to do the other.
But this flies in the face of all of those people who said, well, wait a minute, if you can learn a little discipline, a little enforce a little willpower, well, it spreads from one thing to another and you can benefit your entire life.
No, I don't think it's different from that at all, because experiences can change the brain, and that's a general area called neuroplasticity. And I think, and something that's been observed is that this reserve of willpower, let's just call it willpower, can be exercised. And so you can exercise it like a muscle. And so, for instance, people who undertake an exercise program for several weeks get better at staying on a diet. And so you can exercise it.
And is there any way that we could measure our willpower tank and see how we're doing?
Measure your willpower tank. Well, people have done this in the laboratory, so one kind of study that people have done is some college students who are always up for this kind of thing were given a puzzle to solve, and they weren't told that the puzzle was impossible. And what psychologists measured was how long they spent working on this puzzle. And on an average, they spent 20 minutes working on it. And so I guess you could do something like that.
And build up your muscle, if you will.
Yeah, maybe the amount of time you spend working on a hard puzzle before you give up.
Our guest is Sam Wong, an associate professor of molecular biology and neuroscience at Princeton. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. Have you exercised your willpower muscle of late? How have you prioritized the uses of that finite supply of willpower? 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. Farah joins us. Farah calling from Phoenix, Arizona.
Hi.
Hi, Farah.
Hi, Farah.
Hi. I'm kind of embarrassed, actually, to tell you this, but for Lent, I gave up sweets, which is not so embarrassing, but I also try to give up gossip blogs. And
gossip blogs?
Gossip blogs, like Press Hilton, things like that. And I could... I put the sweets, but as soon as I tried to do the gossip blogs, I just could not. I couldn't do it. And so I rewarded myself for not eating sweets by reading the gossip blog.
So you could pass on the rocky road, but TMZ, you were there.
I was there. Couldn't help it.
And so is this a classic example, do you think, Sam?
I think that's a good example. The thing is, different activities reward us to different extents, and the brain has different reward mechanisms. And so we wrote in our book, Welcome to Your Brain, that that the brain has systems for rewarding you. In your case, Farah, maybe the thing that really rewards you is social information, like what's happening with, whatever your favorite gossip story is.
Yeah, Angelina Jolie.
Yeah. And,
are they married? Is she pregnant? Anyway. Farah, thanks very much for the call. And you're going to run it right out and buy a big dish of ice cream and a copy of Us Magazine?
Exactly. Us Weekly. It's on the lap.
Just do one or the other. Try that.
One or the other. Thanks very much and good luck, Farah.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we could go to, this is, excuse me, five. Shara, Shara with us in Sacramento.
Yes, I'm obsessive compulsive. And I wonder if we either have a different mechanism or a different capacity. Because I went on a medical fast a number of years ago, 300 calories a day.
Plus 300 calories a day?
Yes, they don't do that anymore.
Good.
Really. It was, well.
Well, you could pick up 300 calories walking past a bakery.
No. But I finished my master's degree at the same time. In fact, the day that I defended my thesis was the first day that I hadn't lost any weight, and I was more upset about that than I was proud about having the thesis accepted.
So Sam Wong, she's talking about OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder. Might this change the equation somewhat?
I think it does, because obsessive compulsive disorder is not all that terribly well understood, but it, you know, as Shara knows, it's the perseveration of an activity over and over again, and that would be something in which the act of willpower then would be to decide not to do something. And so that's an unusual situation. Did you use your OCD to write your thesis, Shara?
Well, it got it done. I didn't, you know, I'm usually not aware of it unless I get ridiculous about repeating things and it gets in my way. But it was just, it had to be done, and so I just ground my teeth and did it.
Well,
it had never occurred to me before. I've never heard this theory that you can only, you know, you've only got so much drive.
Willpower.
Yeah, well, these appear to the best of anyone's knowledge, these appear to draw on different mental resources. And so when people talk about ego depletion or self-regulation, those are probably mechanisms that are in the front of the brain, in the prefrontal cortex, and another part of the brain called the anterior cingulate. And obsessive compulsive disorder is, as I said, it's not terribly well understood, but it appears to draw on other brain regions. And the treatments, to my knowledge, that people give for OCD are not the kinds of things that are known to affect willpower. And so that's something different. That's probably your brain's reward system.
Shara, thanks very much for the call, and congratulations on the master's degree.
Yes, congratulations.
Thanks.
Let's see if we can go now to Alex. Alex calling us from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Hi, Neil. How are you today?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
I'm not so sure I completely agree that the will is a finite resource. I feel that every individual choice and decision we make is made in that moment, and I think that one of the reasons that I see some people who decide to either to do something or not to do something, the caving in to the desire is usually having to do with the pain that's involved with either choosing not to do something or choosing to do something. And I think that maybe we live in a time where we just really can't deal with any discomfort at all. And that's what the, you know, that's what we say, well, my willpower caved in, so I went and grabbed a cigarette or I went and had a donut. No, not really. It's just the pain of not having that or the pain of desiring something caused us to cave in, because we're really pleasure-seeking entities.
That's an interesting point that Alex has made. In modern times, you can, of course, have whatever you want in many cases on demand, and that changes the formula about what constitutes willpower. So we were talking about a very specific controlled situation of being faced with a situation where you have to control yourself. And now moral decision-making, emotional decision-making, these are things that call on all your brain's resources, and there's much more to making decisions than just this one thing that's been studied in the lab in isolation.
I see. Great show, and let's all have more willpower.
Let's exercise that muscle, Alex.
That's right.
Thanks very much. Let's go now to Tony. Tony's on the line in San Francisco.
Hi there. I was wondering if your study had any implications on the treatment of addiction.
On the treatment of addiction. Oh, that's interesting. Well, Tony, let's see. So first, it was these are studies done by psychologist Roy Baumeister, and what we did is we just synthesized all of their work and we put it together into something that would be helpful for people's everyday lives.
And in English, yeah.
And in English, yes, right. It turns out that actually, it's a bit of work going through these technical articles and making sense out of them.
They'll do some work with it later.
Yes. So for addiction, that's an interesting question. Addiction is. You mean, for instance, to something like, say, cocaine or alcohol, that kind of addiction?
Right,
Yeah, those kinds of addiction induce chemical changes in the brain, and that's a thing that's not all that well understood. But those again act on these mechanisms in the brain for reward, and it's sort of a different part of the brain than willpower. Now, obviously, you have to exert your willpower in order to say no to whatever it is that's being offered to you, whether it be a gossip blog or an illicit drug. And so certainly willpower training can help you in this regard, but there are other things that are chemical in nature that are out of reach of this kind of training.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thanks for the call.
Thanks, Tony.
Sam Wong is a co-author, along with Sandra Amott, the editor-in-chief of Nature Neuroscience, of the book Welcome to Your Brain, Why You Lose Your Car Keys But Never Forget How to Drive and Other Puzzles of Everyday Life. We're talking to them about an op-ed that appeared in the New York Times called Tighten Your Belt, Strengthen Your Mind. Again, if you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Trisha's on the line. Trisha calling us from Charlottesville in Virginia.
Hi there. I guess, the question I have has to do with, just what you said there, tighten your belt. It's more of a comment. I'm from a family that has never had a problem exercising willpower. You know, we look around at people and just wonder, what's the issue? You know, if you don't want to eat something, just don't eat it. You know, and I just have always wondered what it is with people, and I'm just very curious in your research if you have a comment on that.
Do you and your family members find that you're good at not only refusing food but other situations, like social situations, or?
Yeah, I mean, we just knuckle down and do it. If there's work to be done, we just do it. And we don't find that this is really onerous. I'm just curious about that because in our whole family, this has been the situation.
That's interesting. There are elements of personality that are heritable, and to my knowledge, people have not studied whether willpower is an inherited quantity, but your family might suggest that that's the case.
Yes, certainly, it's just absolutely expected, and we don't, we're not awful people, we're not boring, we're fun, it's just what we do.
Do you find that because you grew up in that context where that sort of willpower was commonplace that you have difficulty understanding why other people don't have it?
Yeah, and we certainly aren't judgmental about it. I've often been curious.
Well, maybe some ancestor really, really pumped up that willpower muscle.
Oh, yes, it's the whole Irish thing. You know, you had to get through the famine and everything and, have fun later in the pub, right?
That's, I guess, the idea. Trisha, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. And let's try now Mary, and Mary's with us from Denver, Colorado.
Hi.
Hi, Mary.
Hi, Mary.
Hi. I am on a very strict diet having to do with allergies that I may have developed. And I've noticed, I'm a psychotherapist, and I've noticed that I am a little crankier or less patient with not only my family and friends, but also my clients. And I had attributed it to not having any of the kinds of foods I'm used to eating, but it's now occurring to me that it may have something to do with this research that you've done, that I'm putting all of my energy into this diet, and I don't have a lot of reserves to exercise patients when I usually have been able to do that.
That's interesting. So the studies from the Baumeister people and the studies that we describe in Welcome to Your Brain go into the idea that blood sugar may be a limiting resource. And one possibility, if you're on the strict diet, is you could consider things that are within your diet that allow you to keep an even keel on your blood sugar, like complex carbohydrates or proteins, things that will keep you from fluctuating too much during the day. Have you thought about that?
I'm definitely doing that. I'm doing this with a naturopath and definitely focusing on all the complex carbohydrates and certain amounts of protein. I'm not doing any red meat, but certainly fish and chicken. But I've cut back on all the caffeine, sugar, dairy, wheat, gluten. All of that is gone.
So I'm feeling a little cranky just listening to this.
I was also going to suggest, Mary, have you considered the idea that maybe your family and your clients are all idiots and that was just you were just blind to it when you were eating?
I love that. Well, no, I'd rather not think that, but I definitely have noticed a shift, and more so with family and friends, but it's definitely making its way into the client territory. But I was fascinated by your comments and your research today. It made me think about it in a different way.
Give in to other small impulses that are harmless. Try that out and see if it helps.
Okay. I will do that.
Good luck, Mary. Thanks.
Bye, Mary.
Thank you.
Here's an email from Adam. I'm a medical student. I just finished taking my first of a series of licensing exams. The one thing I told myself I would not do during the months I spent studying for this standardized test was to stop exercising, stop eating healthily, and start pounding the junk food. I tried very hard, and the studying always seemed to edge everything else out in my mind. I did amazingly on the exam. But I gained 12 pounds and ended up being very out of shape.
Common experience. Everything goes. The diet goes. Laundry goes. I know where Adam's been.
In fact, you've probably been there.
Yes, I have. In my line of work, there are a lot of deadlines that come up, and we usually do it at the last minute. So I am totally sympathetic to Adam.
And I wonder, how do you know when willpower has succeeded? Is there flag to be posted on the top of that mountain of willpower?
Well, one thing that you can do is you can undertake, say, a small task that is difficult but attainable, and that is in some sense sort of a willpower exercise. And so if you set yourself clear goals, and if you don't set yourself too many goals at once, then that accomplishment you feel will provide reinforcement that makes you more likely to exert willpower again.
Sam Wong, thanks very much for your time today. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks a lot.
Sam Wong, Associate Professor of Molecular Biology and Neuroscience at Princeton University, co-author of a New York Times op-ed titled Tighten Your Belt, Strengthen Your Mind, with us today from the studios at Princeton. Tomorrow we'll be broadcasting live from the museum, all about confidential sources. Stay with us. I'm Neil Cohn, and this is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.